It's now time for Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM. He's here to take your questions regarding law and estate planning at 390-1370. And now, here's attorney Brad Wewell.
Good morning, everybody. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad. We are here on a nice, warm, overcast day. My favorite kind of day. So we're here on Saturday looking to try to help you with your estate planning questions, with your estate planning issues, with your estate planning curiosities. We've got a couple of curiosities here this morning. So this is a call-in show about estate planning. I am board certified by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization in estate planning and probate law. So I'm a lawyer, and we just do this stuff at our law firm, the Wewell Law Firm. So we are an estate planning law firm. We take questions on this show. We have a call-in number. Our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. That's 390-1370, 390-1370. And on the show, we answer questions about all kinds of stuff related to estate planning, which may be wills and trusts and probate and asset protection. And we do some business planning. We can talk about charitable planning. We can talk about special needs planning for families with disability challenged children. We can talk about Medicaid. We can talk about pets. We got a cool little pet story this morning on estate planning. We can talk about anything you want to talk about regarding estate planning this morning. So give us a call at 390-1370, 390-1370. If you've got a question today about anything to do with estate planning, a concern about a will, a concern about an estate, a concern about a power of attorney, a concern about a relative, a concern about a lawyer, let us know. We're happy to help and give you the best answer we can regarding your estate issue. We also have an email address, so you can email me your question, and I'll be happy to answer your email question on the air. And our email address is askbrad@wiewell.us. It's askbrad@wiewell.us, wiewell.us. And if you email me your question again, I'll read it on the air, and we'll be happy to give you an answer and see where we go with that, too. So this is Law Talk with Brad. This is an estate planning call-in show. I've got Sam Wewell out there on the phones, and he has got probably about another 3 or 4 months before he goes off to college. So he actually gets paid to do this. So give him a call, work the boy, ask us your question, and we'll give you an answer, too. And we're going to see where we go this morning with your calls and with what we've got to talk about. So let's get started. Let's see where we go. We're going to start off. Candace Bocock, who is the director of Probate and Trust Administration Services at the Wewell Law Firm, is also the producer of the show, and she kind of helps me find things to talk about. And Candace, by the way, will be our guest next week on Law Talk with Brad, and she is going to talk about probate and some challenges there, talk about what happens when somebody dies with living trust, what sort of issues are out there as well. But today, we're going to kind of dig in here and see, and the first thing we're going to talk about is something that's been in the news before, and that's this gal, Leona Helmsley. Now, Leona Helmsley, cut a wide swath during her life. She was apparently a woman of very modest means who married a man of very substantial means, a man named Harry Helmsley. And Harry was a hotel tycoon. And there are Helmsley hotels around, primarily, my recollection is, in the East Coast, Northeast. But Harry had quite a hotel empire. She married Harry, married into the money, ended up with all of Harry's estate, and therefore a lot of money, about a $5 billion fortune. Not a bad start to the day. Let's just say that. And where Leona got in trouble, and she got in trouble a couple of times, one is she was known as the Queen of Mean, which meant that she was very mean to her employees, very mean to anybody who had anything to do with her, and was eventually sent to jail. And I can't recall exactly what she did to end up going to jail, but she went to jail for a little while. Then she came out, still rich, of course. And then she did a will. And this is the second way she got herself in trouble. Not in trouble, but some, let's call it notoriety, because she's dead. I guess you can't be in too much trouble when you're dead, because nobody can do much to you. And she left a will that left lots of money to her dog, $12 million, as I recall, to her dog. And it's a dog's life, right? Not a bad deal. My dogs, we have two dogs. And those dogs don't do a lot of work around the house, let's put it like that. And with a $12 million trust fund, I'm sure they do that much better. And so a couple years ago when Leona died, this was a huge deal about all the money she left. Actually, yeah, she left $12 million to her dog. And then she left apparently $136 million to go to charity. And she specified in her will that she wanted it to go to dog-related charities. And if you're a dog lover out there, you know, as crazy as it might be to leave $12 million to your dog, well, you know, some people might see that. In fact, in Texas, you can do pet trusts. And I'm going to be giving a talk, one of our lawyers anyway, is going to be giving a talk soon. You know, there's going to be a workshop with Velocity Credit Union, and they're going to have a workshop on pet planning. So we'll let you know more about that as we get closer. But you can do a pet trust, and I guess that's what Leona kind of did with the $12 million to her dog and then $136 million to dog-related charities, but it didn't happen that way. And so this is going to be a cautionary tale, folks, on estate planning gone awry. And what happened was, apparently, a couple of grandchildren challenged her will because the grandkids got nothing. It all went to charity and her dog. And so the grandchildren challenged this thing. And the judge awarded two of her grandchildren $6 million bucks because they were her grandchildren, I guess. And that's, you know, frankly, not normal. But she, again, according to her will or what happened to her will, that's what ended up being the result. And the judge, cold-hearted as he was, reduced the amount going to her dog. And by the way, her dog's name was Trouble, in case you forgot that. Trouble, aptly named dog if ever there was one, cut the poor dog's share from $12 million to $2 million. I got to believe that $2 million is going to buy a lot of Purina, don't you think, Snoop? That'll buy a little Alpo, I think. And so Trouble is going to have $2 million bucks set aside to keep him or him or her in the lap of luxury for the rest of the dog's natural life. But the judge did cut it back to $2 million. And then the judge did something else that was very unusual and, again, controversial. And what the judge did was he said, no, you don't have to give all $136 million to dog-related enterprises. You can give a lot of that money to other sorts of charities that are out there. And I'm sorry, but you only have to give $1 million of $136 million to dog-related charities, and you can give the rest to other outfits, other charitable outfits. And they did. Now, you might be thinking, holy cow, as crazy and nutty as this lady was, and I think we would put her certainly in the nutty category, that was her will. She wrote it. It's her property. She can do what she wants to with it. And you can be kind of nutty in these things, folks. And unless you have personally lost your marbles and you're incompetent to make a will, your will should stand up. And it doesn't in this case. The judge said, no. I'm sure that's not what she really meant. I'm sure that's not what she really meant. We're really going to let these trustees of this charitable trust, we're going to let them give it to other worthy causes. And frankly, the causes they gave it to are very worthy, I'm sure. They gave it to sex abuse victims. They gave it to a Jewish day school. Gave it to homeless causes. Gave $40 million to the Center of Digestive Diseases at New York Presbyterian Hospital. They gave a bunch to the bowel disease program at Mount Sinai Medical Center, I guess in New York. They gave a lot of money to a lot of good things, but they only gave $1 million to the dogs. And there is a concept in the law. The concept is called, it's Latin, cypre. And what it means is that the court can come back and look at a charitable distribution and kind of rework it to match up with the perceived intent of the deceased. And the court, I presume, didn't think that her will was clear enough when it said, I want $136 million to go to dog-related causes. And that's how The judge worked around with the trustees of this trust to give it to a lot of other outfits and give very little to animals, specifically to dogs. So what's the answer? What can you do? Well, if you're interested in giving money to charity, which a lot of people are, it's a wonderful thing. You can do a lot of good giving money to charity. Then you better be pretty darn specific. And my guess is, and I don't have a copy of the will right here in front of me, but my guess is she said that her trustees could award it primarily to dog-related charities, whatever. And it was too loosey-goosey. If she had said, I leave 30% to the American Humane Society and I leave 30% to the Dog Care Center of New York and I leave the remaining 40% to, I don't know what, PETA, then that probably would have stood and I would imagine would have stood. And if the judge had gone in to try to monkey with that, then PETA and the Humane Society and the Dog Care Center would have been able to come to court and challenge the judge and say, Judge, look, let's just kind of see what this will says. Oh, look, there's our name. And look at the percentage next to our name. And you've got to give us that. And you can't go monkeying with this thing. But her will was too broad and subject to too much interpretation. And because it wasn't specific enough, the judge let the trustees go off the reservation, way off the reservation, and do things that, from the terms of her will, were not provided for. They gave some money, it looks like, also to food relief in Africa. They gave money to Cornell School of Hotel Administration. I mean, again, nothing wrong with that. But the will said $136 million, and in fact, again, only $1 million went to dog-related charities, and those were apparently C&I dogs, Dogs for the Deaf, and a program to help inmates raise puppies to become bomb sniffers. So there you go, Stu. There you go. There you go. That's a good one. It is a good one. It is a good one. But let's say the dog sniffing dogs hadn't split $1 million with a bunch of other folks. Let's say they'd gotten 10, 20, 30 million. A lot more dog sniffing dogs out there. And bomb sniffing dogs, excuse me. All dogs sniff, as we know. Bomb sniffing dogs out there. So anyway, just an interesting story and something that, we thought we'd bring to your attention because there are things that if you do them right will work and if you don't do them right won't work. And we keep getting these wills in our office, folks. Handwritten wills, wills done by borrowing a neighbor's will. We get software wills in. They typically are really, hope this is a legal word to say on the air, a crappy stuff. They're crappy. And stuff doesn't work well if you don't go to a qualified lawyer and get it done right. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work at all, and the family will end up spending lots and lots of money on legal fees and things like that. One of the challenges that the grandkids made against Mrs. Helmsley was that she was incompetent when she signed her will. Well, there are some things that you can do if you think your family is going to challenge your competency because you're too old or because you're too sick or because there's already a diagnosis, frankly, of Alzheimer's or dementia or something like that. There are ways to make sure, to the best of our ability, that your will is still valid and it's still enforced. Okay? If, in fact, you really don't know what you're doing, you are not going to be aware of what you're doing. You cannot sign a will. You cannot sign a trust. And frankly, you missed the boat. You waited too long. But if you do it right, and somebody challenges this thing, you can put in a lot of things to make sure your wishes are upheld. And anybody who challenges it gets cut out. So anyway, Fiona Helmsley, let this be a lesson to you. Do it right. Do it right. Do it right. Okay. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, all our phone lines are open. Is that correct, Snoop? All our phone lines are open at 390-1370, 390-1370. Happy to take your calls on anything to do with estate planning this morning, and we'll be back right after the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
Good morning and welcome back. This is Law Talk with Brad. This is Brad Wewell. And again, this is a show focused on estate planning. We're taking calls this morning at 390-1370, 390-1370. If you've got a call this morning relating to anything to do with estate planning, give us a call. Happy to talk. If you've got an email you want to send over, you can send an email to me at askbrad, askbrad at wewell.us. So it's askbrad at wiewel.us. And I'll be happy to answer your email and give you an answer over the air. So while we were on break, Jonathan Daniels, our excellent board man, otherwise known as Snoop, did a little background research for me, thank you, Snoop, and said that Leona Helmsley went to jail because of tax evasion. And that's a good lesson, too, right? Leona has been a great role model for a lot of folks here. And don't evade your taxes. You can avoid paying taxes. The difference in avoiding and evading is a legitimate, smart thing to do. Evading puts you in jail. So avoiding is following competent legal advice and accounting advice and things like that. And evading is not filing or following the advice of some scam artist or something like that. So Leona said that only little people pay taxes. Is that right, yes, Snoop? And that's a quote, direct quote. So anyway, don't do what Leona Helmsley did. Now, looks like we got a call on line one from Tom. Tom, Brad Wewell, Law Talk with Brad. Thanks for calling. What can I help you with?
Yes, Brad. About 12 years ago, we helped my older daughter buy a house, and that's worked out very well from an appreciation standpoint. It's still in our name, her parents' name. And so even though we've taken care of the fact that it will pass directly to her with a updated will, is there anything else that might make more sense? I'm thinking about maybe getting it actually transferred into her name so she can get the homestead exemption, but I just wonder what your thoughts are on that sort of thing.
Well, that's a great question, Tom, and a lot of people out there are doing the same thing and have done the same thing. It is common at our law firm to see folks come in that have done that, and then they kind of go, well, okay, what do we do now? And there are a couple options that you've got, and I think you're on the right track more than likely, and the right track would be to eventually give it to her. And if you give it to her, then a couple of good things happen. First of all, yes, you're right. You can get the homestead exemption for property taxes because you're paying fair market value, I'm sure, for property taxes right now. Is that correct?
Well, fair market and then some. It just went up. The lot just went up from $100,000 to $175,000, and I'm going to a tax appeal meeting right now to learn how to appeal that.
I would do that. I'd fill up the gas tank and head on over there because you're right. That's a huge jump. Yeah, you need to get her going on a homestead, and that's good for two reasons. One is you'll save property taxes, but two, the real kind of secret risk out there is that if you or your wife are sued for a car wreck on the way to the property tax board or any other thing that could happen in your life, and for some reason there's not enough insurance to pay or the insurance company says you're not covered, they can get that house because it's just, you know, second homes are not asset protected in Texas. If you change the ownership over to her name, then it will be asset protected. And then, you know, if you get sued, they're not going to get it. If she gets sued, they're not going to get it. And that's a smart thing, too.
Okay. That's a good additional point. Thanks.
Right. Well, there's a couple ways to do it, too. Let's just kind of, if you got a quick second, I'll walk you through that, too.
Okay.
The first thing you could do is you could actually sell it to her. But my guess is what's going on is you and your wife put down the down payment, and she's been making the mortgage payments. Is that about right?
More or less. Yeah.
Okay, and every so often, every so often you'll have to help out too, right?
Right.
Well, if you literally sold it to her, then, you know, she would have to probably, and let me just say this, in any respect, she may have to refinance because of the fact that mortgages have this thing in them called a due-on-sale clause. And a due-on-sale clause, you'd have to get the lender's permission to transfer it into her name, which you could do, and this would be a great time to refinance anyway, is you could refinance, and then if she doesn't have enough credit, you and your wife could co-sign on the note, which we're not big fans of, but in this case, it sounds like it might work. And then she has it in her name. You're on the mortgage to help out if you need to help her get the mortgage. But with interest rates being so low, that might be a good thing. And then you could sell it to her, and then, you know, she could pay you back, you and your wife back, for your down payment on a little note, and she covers the mortgage and gets on down the road, or eventually you could forgive that note.
But wouldn't I have to pay some kind of capital gains at that point?
The downside of that would be you would have to pay some capital gains at that point. You would pay it based upon, again, the difference in what it was when you bought it 14 years ago and what it is today. So capital gains taxes are 15%, and you are not going to be eligible. There's a special thing that you may be aware of for a homestead or a second home, a $250,000 exclusion from capital gains taxes. You would not be eligible for it because your daughter's living there and your wife haven't in the last 5 years. But you could give it to her, too. Now, if you give it to her, you can give, as you probably know, if you're a regular listener, you and your wife can give her $13,000 apiece. There's probably more equity in it than that, it sounds like, with just what the property tax board thinks. And so you can give her the whole darn equity in it, your equity in it. And if it's over the $13,000 apiece, you would file a gift tax return next year and just tell the IRS, look, we gave our daughter, let's say, a total of $100,000. And out of the $100,000, you get to use $13,000 of your annual exclusion. Your wife gets to use $13,000 of her annual exclusion. That means we really made a taxable gift to her of $74,000. And then you file it. You don't pay gift taxes. But when you die, you have that much left of an estate exemption to use. And but you've gotten the house out of your name. You've gotten the appreciation out of your name. You got the house in your daughter's name. It's safe from lawsuits. You got lower property taxes. It's probably a smart thing to do.
And she wouldn't have any IRS liability receiving that gift?
No, sir. The person... It's a great question, too, Tom. The person receiving the gift never has any, typically doesn't have any gift tax implications. The donor, you and your wife, are the ones who are making the gift, and the donors are the ones who have to report an excessive gift to the IRS. And if there are any taxes, you two would pay them. She wouldn't pay them. But in this case, there won't be any gift tax at all.
Well, that sounds like the way to go, then.
Okay. Probably is.
Thanks for your help.
Hey, listen, thanks for listening. Appreciate your call. All right, have a great day. Good luck at the property tax board.
Bye.
All right. Yeah, property taxes are out there, and they're rough. And the paper, I think, had a story this morning on Travis's appraisals are up. Williamson's maybe down a little bit, but, you know, nobody's going to see much of a difference in property taxes. Nobody's going to see the property tax bill going down much. I can guarantee you that. And Tom, sounds like wherever this property is located, it's up and going up again. So, anyway, good question. Call in number 390-1370, 390-1370. All our phone lines are open. Happy to take your calls. Happy to talk about what you want to talk about and give you an answer and get you on down the road with some of these questions that people have that just, you know, can frustrate you. And there typically is an answer, and there's typically a pretty good answer. But with all this legal stuff, the last thing you want to do, again, is do it on your own. Because if you do it on your own, there's a great chance you're going to screw it up. And if you screw it up, then you're going to wish you hadn't, because eventually somebody's going to have to pay the piper, and the piper in estate stuff is an expensive piper. And you, again, you don't want to end up in a situation where you walk into the lawyer's office when somebody's passed away and they say, well, you know, if you'd done it this other way, our fee would be a lot less, there wouldn't be any hassle, and we can get it all done right away. And instead, the fee's high, the hassle level is high, you're frustrated and angry and mixed up, all because somebody, the deceased, didn't do it right or tried to do it on the cheap. So I'll leave that with you today. 390-1370, 390-1370. I mentioned at the end of last week's show that I talked about Evel Knievel this morning. We got a couple of hot little things going on here. I love these little media stories kind of peeking under the veil of the rich and famous. And so Evel Knievel, I'm going to put Evel in the category of famous but not rich. When Evel died, he had total assets. Let's have a little drum roll here. Got a drum roll, Snoop? There you go. Total assets of $12,500, people. And he owed, let's see, what did he owe? He owed $64 million. Not too smart, evil. He left a will and didn't really screw that up, thank heavens. He went to a lawyer and got it done. But it's an interesting will, and we'll get to it in a second. But we got David on the line. And, David, you got a good question, looks like, on software wills. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
what can I help you with?
Sure. I bought some of that will software, you know, a while back, and I've been meaning to put the will together on that. I hear your concern. The question that I have is, would it make sense for me to put together the details at the very least so that, you know, that when I come in for an interview to yourself or some other attorney, that we would have a little bit more information already put, you know, on the table, so to speak?
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think that we like when folks walk in our door, the more educated they are, the better the meeting. And the shorter the meeting, because you don't have to take as much time to explain everything that you do when somebody walks in and they're with it, and they've got some knowledge of them. So yeah, I mean it's perfectly fine to do that. And I'm going to send you to also our website if you're interested in learning more about it. We've got a great website. It's TexasTrustLaw.com.
Sure.
And we've got a library in there, David. And in the library, we've got 12 articles right now about different estate planning topics. You may want to go there. This month's article, we just put a new one up for May, are the challenges that people have that are single. And are you single or married?
I'm married.
Good. All right. Well, then there's the one from last month is Marital Matters. So we're kind of covering both things. But you may want to go there and check that out, too. But, yeah, do the research. But let me just tell you, I was doing a little research on my own, and you hear me preach against software wills and against things that that are on the cheap, because honestly, and I'm not doing it other than to save people a lot of heartache and a lot of expense when somebody dies. But I went to the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, and they regulate a lot of interesting little companies that or outfits that you've got to have a license for. So you have to have a license. I'm just going to read through this if you got a second, David. Air conditioning contractors need a license in Texas, as do air conditioning technicians, as do auctioneers and barbers and boxers, so do contestants. So I guess if you run a contest in Texas, you may need a license, as do cosmetologists. I'm sure you knew that. Electricians, elevator folks, I'm glad about that. Boxers. Here's one. Matchmakers. Now, I like fixing people up, and I didn't know I needed a license on that. But the point here is timekeepers, tow truck operators, vehicle storage facilities, well drillers, the guy that have, you got a sprinkler system in your lawn, that guy has to be licensed. And the point is that people have to be licensed to put a sprinkler system in your backyard, and yet people go out and take their entire estate and leave it in the hands of some computer programmer who may or may not have got it right, and the chances of you getting it right are going to be pretty slim, too. So,
right. Well, you know, you brought up, I think one of the people on your list was a hairdresser, right?
Yeah, that's
you
right.
Know, somebody has to be licensed to, you know, to cut your hair.
Right.
And yet you turn around, you know, and that could be, what, $15, $20, but, you know, then you turn around and look at a $100,000 estate or maybe a $100 million estate. And they're going to leave that to the software side.
We're going to do that for $35 or whatever. Right. So you've got a great and I appreciate that. So get, you know, if you want to check out the, you already got it. Look it over, you know, kind of look at what sort of supporting material they may give you as far as, you know, just educational stuff. This is the ramification of this selection, whatever. There's going to be, I would imagine, some of that. And then make an appointment with a competent lawyer. Get it done. And again, it will make your meeting a lot shorter, and it will also make you a much more knowledgeable consumer because, you know, there are a lot of questions and a lot of decisions you're going to have to make. And if you go in and have a pretty good idea of what you want and how you want it laid out, I want a will, no, I want a living trust, that'll make the meeting so much more pleasant too. So,
is there a line that kind of you draw in the sand, so to speak, to decide whether or not you should go with a living trust or a trust type of situation versus wills?
There kind of is and there kind of isn't. We kind of draw the line. It's kind of a floating line sometimes. But we, at our law firm, if somebody calls in, we always ask the question, okay, we're going to ask you, tell us a little bit about you financially. Are you over $500,000 in net worth, excluding your house, excluding any life insurance? And if you are, then we may end up talking about a trust, although we may end up doing a will. If you're under $500,000, excluding your house and excluding your life insurance, we're almost always going to talk about doing a will because it's going to be, frankly, a less expensive option, and it's probably going to be a good option for that particular family. So it that doesn't mean that everybody over $500,000 ends up with a trust because they don't, and it's not appropriate for everybody over $500,000 to have a trust. Or that we wouldn't do a living trust for somebody with a smaller estate. Just a lot of little issues. But that's kind of where we draw a line in the sand and say above that we may discuss it and below that we probably won't.
I see.
Does that help?
Okay, well, that's good information too.
Okay, well, good. I appreciate that. And appreciate your call. And anything else I can help you with?
We had one of the reasons why we even jumped into the idea of doing a will was because we had actually done it right after we got married. We had put together a will right after we got married, and but it was in another state.
Right.
And when we moved down here to Texas, I've been kind of leery about, you know, we've had a lot of life change since then, right? A couple of kids have
sure.
been at it, and all
finances
of that.
Have so, changed, of course, too, right?
Sure, exactly. So, you know, wondering, okay, should we do this or not? And then, so we decided, we saw this software at, you know,
Best Office Depot,
at the
whatever
store, right?
Yeah.
And you go, okay, well, let's see if we can do it this way. And so that's,
listen, at least the point I'll give you, and I'll give you some kudos on this, you're thinking about it. Okay, you know that you've got an issue, and you're willing to do the planning. And I'll tell you, that's a huge thing. And out-of-state stuff, I've said it before, but I'll say it again, and I'm sure I'll repeat it in the future. It doesn't mean that the will is invalid, but it will certainly or could certainly cause some complexity when somebody dies. And as you mentioned, your finances have changed, and the law has changed a number of times since you did that. And you got kids, you didn't have kids, and everybody likes seeing their kids in their will, and you need to have that done too.
Right.
So, so you're on the right track, but just make sure, honestly, that you get in front of a competent attorney, but have your notes ready and have your checklist in front of you. You sound like you might be an engineer.
No, actually, I'm an artist.
No kidding.
And yeah, well, I'm also a software developer. So
okay, well, you sound more organized than the average person out there. So that's again, you're thinking about things and. And think about them and then take action too, David,
yeah.
because the
yeah.
problem is we can think this thing to death and we get calls from frustrated folks. I can't get somebody to take action. They're still thinking. Think, decide, and move. And
yeah,
you'll be a lot better shape if you did.
So when we sit in front of somebody, what's the ballpark of depending on the scope and everything, what's the ballpark for from a pricing standpoint?
Everybody asks that question, and the answer is it's you can't say. What we do at our law firm, we don't quote fees in advance because everybody's situation is going to be different. What
okay.
we do at the WeWill Law Firm, though, to kind of help that situation is we offer a complimentary initial consultation.
Right.
So folks can come okay. in, we'll sit down, we'll go through whatever they've got. It's usually an hour and a half, 2 hour long visit. Sometimes it's an hour depending on what the issue may be. Once we get an idea of what we're dealing with, we can quote a fee, and most of our fees are going to be fixed fees. This is it. And sometimes we can do a range where we might say, okay, you can do a Cadillac for X, a Buick for Y, and a Chevy for Z. And
right.
some people like that too. So you really, any lawyer who's going to quote you a fee over the phone or over the air is
no,
really...
And I guess then the other thing is that if somebody comes in organized, then they're probably going to be in a better situation than
somebody who comes in with without a clue as to why they're really there, what they want to accomplish. That is true.
Right.
That is
yeah.
very true.
Okay.
All right. Great. Have a good weekend, and I appreciate your call.
Hey, thank you very much.
You bet. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All
right, Snoop, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to have time for a few more calls. Our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
All right. Welcome back. This is Law Talk with Brad. This is Brad Wewell. Looks like we got a call on line one from Jonah. And Jonah, you sound like a property tax expert. Is that right? Jonah.
This is John in Round
John,
Rock.
There you go. John, excuse me.
Texas has a law. It's the Texas Tax Code 33.06,
okay,
where if you're over 65, you can defer your taxes until you either pass away or sell the house.
Okay.
And I just wondered what your opinion of that particular program. Typically what you do is you take out whole life insurance to cover the taxes.
Yeah, that's right. And it's an interesting deal. There was an outfit in Austin for quite a while that was doing seminars on that too. And, you know, it's kind of a financial question, John. I'm not a financial advisor per se. We don't do financial planning. We're just lawyers at the Wewell Law Firm. But you're right. Let me explain this to our listeners. The law says that if you are over 65 or disabled, that, frankly, you can quit paying your property taxes on your homestead. And they will be deferred, and you can you've got to file something with the county and tell them that you want to defer them with the chief appraiser of the appraisal district, and that you want to defer them, and you don't have to pay them, and interest will run. They'll take a lien against the house, and then when you pass away, within 6 months after you're gone, then they can collect it from the kids, and the kids have to sell the house and get on down the road. But there are a few exceptions to that, too. So what you're saying, John, and I know the technique, is that some advisors out there will say, look, let's do this. Don't pay your property taxes now that you're over 65. Let's take the money you're saving on property taxes, and let's go buy some life insurance on your life so that when you die, we'll have more money than we would have had just having the house equity. You'll have plenty of money. The kids will have plenty of money to pay off the tax lien and money to pocket because the death benefit and the life insurance was so large. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes, that's correct. And, right. And my understanding is that it accrues at a 8% interest, but the interest is not compounded each year. It's just a simple interest.
Okay, I don't know that, but that sounds plausible. Yes, if you know, it sounds like you've read this, and frankly, probably know more about it than I do. Other than this is a technique that's out there, and so the question I think that you've got is what's the economics of this? And the economics of it may be really smart, but to get the life insurance is going to be the key. And to get a life insurance policy with a reasonable death benefit that's going to kind of have premiums around what you're saving on property taxes is really going to depend on your health, too.
Yeah, and, for a whole life, you would actually have to qualify for it.
Well, for any life, you're going to have to qualify for it.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Doug Paul, who's an attorney at our law firm, has a great saying. He says that good health buys life insurance, money just pays for it. And so if somebody is in excellent health and can get a better than standard rating, which means that you're in exemplary health, and that means that your premiums are going to be lower because the insurance company is betting you're going to live a long time, then it may be a smart move to do it and do it. But when you sell the house, if now you're elderly and it's time to maybe move you someplace else, well, the property tax lien is going to be there and it's going to have to be paid at closing. And that may really cut into the amount of equity that's there. And if this is an insurance policy that is going to require continual premium payments, then eventually the premium payments may get to be burdensome and this whole thing could get unwound. So there are a lot of little issues. I'd want you to sit down with somebody who was a very competent financial planner, insurance advisor, and make sure that you run the numbers and ask the question, okay, let's say I'm incapacitated and I can't continue writing the check. We need somebody who's going to have the legal authority to write the check for the premiums. And that if I need to sell the house later, is this thing really going to work, or is it going to be a disaster because the equity is going to be sucked up by the deferred property taxes I didn't pay?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense, yeah.
So okay. I'd also want to make sure you had some long-term care insurance to go with this too, to have some money to pay your living expenses so, again, you don't take a big hit personally because you're thinking you're going to pull $200,000 out of your house, and with the tax deferral, you're only going to get about $100,000. So right. A lot of little issues, but it's a cool little thing. If you're over 65, crazy as it seems, you can quit paying your property taxes, but you've got to notify the appraisal district you're going to do that. And they're not going to go away. They'll just be deferred until you die.
Right.
So
right.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
And great question too, John, by the way.
Yeah, if the math works, it seems like a really good program.
If the math works, it could be a home run.
Right, yeah.
It could be a home run.
You could leave something to the kids.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate it.
Hey, listen, I appreciate you listening. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Good call. Good question. We got a quick little thing while Sam was out there. Lee called in, wants to know an inexpensive way to kind of set up a special needs trust for a disabled child. And I mentioned it before, we got the Arc of Texas Master Pooled Trust, which is a place to go to. You can set up an account with them and have that in your will that the money goes there, or on your living trust that the money goes there, or on your beneficiary designations the money goes there, and they'll manage the money for your loved one in a way that won't disqualify them. It's a great outfit. Their phone number, Master Pooled Trust, is 454-6694, 454-6694. Call them and get whatever you can get, and you can Google the Arc of Texas Master Pooled Trust and pull up their website and check it out too. Okay, Snoop just gave me the 1.5-minute warning, so we're about out of here. It's a lot of fun always doing this show. Appreciate anybody who listens. Appreciate anybody who calls. Appreciate Candace for helping me with this too. Today's Saturday. Tomorrow's Sunday. You know, with the swine flu stuff, you kind of wonder, you know, okay, what the heck could be next? We got all these economic problems. We got the North Koreans with a nuclear bomb. We got swine flu now. Holy cow. Well, you know, the only person that's in charge of this whole thing is God, and you need to go and get his guidance and get his blessing. So get your little hiney out of bed tomorrow and go to church. And if you can't find a good church, give me a call. I'll be happy to kind of ask a few questions and direction the right direction to one that's probably a pretty good one for you. But anyway, go to church. Next week, Candace Bocock, we're going to be talking a lot about probate and what happens when you die with a living trust. And that'll be a great show. So we'll see you next week. Law Talk with Brad. Bye.
Tune in next week for another edition of Law Talk with Brad.